eventually spills back to Fletcher, leans back, and Jasper kicks the opener. Ashcroft's on the run. He'll get the 2-3 here. Ashcroft sends it inside 50. Good footy. Hits Eric Gunston. Another goal. 6 on the board already. The Lions through Neil, the superstar, and Bailey. Big early fly. Falls to Gunston again. 2 and a minute for Jack. Indeed. Rare foray forward for Stasevich. And he nails it. First goal of the season, just the 6th of his career for Big Brando. Here's Ashcroft, works out nicely. The big, hulking presence of McInerney. And Jack's got 6. Another big win for Brisbane at home. The Gabba is their fortress.
It is the Brisbane Lions Fancast, back on a slight delay after Patrick finds his way back down to cold Victoria. Here to wrap up the game against West Coast, the 145 Gabba extraordinaire, where another 81-point win was had. Jack Gunston back into the fold, kicking 6 with tape hanging off his head. And a big task this Friday night against the D's awaits at the MCG. Patrick, you made your way up to Brisbane to catch this one.
Yeah, it was too hot. Didn't like it. That's just a bit of suspension of disbelief there. No, I was there. I wasn't in the sun like you were.
Yeah.
I was going to go and make my way over to make it the juicy double up for the two of us, but then saw that the sun was just absolutely smashing you in the face and thought better of it. So,
yeah, not a bad call at all. I definitely got a little bit of pink on my face, on my arms, behind the neck. So always slip, slop, slap, people. As far as the game's concerned, first quarter, the first sort of 5-6 minutes was a bit of an arm wrestle. Then we blew it open for a sort of 10 to 15 minute patch. Got out to 45 to nothing before the Eagles sort of steadied with a couple of goals before quarter time. But obviously a few changes. Jack Gunston comes back into the team after three or four weeks out of the fold?
Yeah, I thought you were going to just slightly go past the changes because they were. I got all 4 of mine in.
Yep.
If I'm going to be a stickler about it. So pat myself on the back there. Jack Gunston back in, I think, after 3 games. Yeah.
Yes, 3. Sydney, St Kilda and Richmond, he all missed after the Hawthorn, whatever that was. Jimmy Madden also came back into the team, which was a bit of a strange one for me. Zorko makes his appearance again, albeit being subbed off towards the end of the game. And who was our last change as well?
So Jared Berry went out, and also, so Kyle Lehman was in as a sub, so sort of made up, I think. Oh, Jared Lyons. Obviously.
Yes, of course, JL comes in for Dunks, who we will get an update on how he's progressing today. Hopefully he's back in time for the game against the D's. But yeah, Bez will be back, no doubt. A bit of a few changes, and we had another different look at a forward line that, you know, it worked, but it was against West Coast. Is that the mix moving forward? Who knows? No Darcy Fort in the team at all this week for the first time in a while. He's been either in or as the sub, so a bit of a mishmash. We get a look at a different looking forward line where Rayner played more through the middle.
Yeah, I think kind of the writing's on the wall there, because I think with Melbourne and their kind of forward woes and pushing Petrarca up forward, it's kind of going to be interesting to see what will happen if we have, like, you know, the quintessential ball midfield game breaker going out of the midfield and playing forward, and Rayner kind of, due to not having to play the role as a third tall, actually going into the midfield and playing the, like, Petrarca-esque role, and how that could be a bit of... yeah, it spices a little bit of, like, ring theory there, I think. So,
yeah.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's the game that's on everyone's mind is this Friday, but we will chat about West Coast. You know, obviously, the biggest news of the week, Gunston coming back after his little mini preseason, slotted in seamlessly, seemed to move pretty well, and obviously 6 goals speaks for itself. Is that the forward line that you think we need and want moving forward, or is it... Depends on who we come up against.
Well, I would say that the inclusion of Gunston kind of facilitates Fort not being the sub. So it's we talked about this a few weeks ago, just as to whether, like, you know, are you willing to play, you know, whatever they say, 2-3 talls. There's a lot of, I suppose, kind of like sticklerish for the actual number, but it sort of doesn't really systematically matter whether we play Hipwood, Danaher, Rayner or hit with Danaher and Gunston. They still functionally do the same thing. It's just kind of moving the other parts around it. I've said for quite a while that I think that Gunston's still in our best 22. There was an interesting article that came out about him sort of sitting up in the box and his sort of leading patterns not really matching up with the kicks inside 50, whether it was sort of down to the team in Hawthorn knowing him and the way he played a lot better, which is understandable given you're there for a million years. But he was able to kind of see the areas that he was missing and the spaces that were opening up. And although there were probably only two or three of the goals he kicked that were from leads, and, you know, fair enough, he's only playing on Jaden Hunt, whatever. It still is it's an improved sign. So, yes, to answer your question in a really long-winded and insane way.
It's an interesting one because there is a degree of, you know, we're playing West Coast, how much do you actually take away from it? And, you know, if he can replicate that against Melbourne at the MCG, then I'm sold 100% that's our forward line moving forward. The thing that I've sort of noticed, not just this week, but last week against Richmond as well, is, and you brought it up at the very start of the year, is that we just sort of struggle with those intercept defenders. Like McGovern, Barras, and even Hoff, they all sort of took a fair amount of intercept marks. And, you know, while we still won by 81 points, we did so against Richmond as well, but that didn't stop Loston and Broad and Grimes still taking their fair share of intercept marks as well. So we're getting the ball in enough. Like, we're smashing inside 50s numbers-wise, but we're still leaving plenty out there as well in terms of our accuracy in front of goal. But
there's an element of that kind of looking at statistically how kind of Collingwood are playing from the back half, how like that could be pretty devastating if we were coughing up those intercepts. So as to whether that's like player accountability and trying to make sure that that doesn't happen, or whether it's the continued effort of lowering the eyes, or whether it's also just the sheer volume of inside 50s we do tend to create. Because I think, you know, we're sort of spoiled a little bit in terms of having one of the best intercept defenders on the comp in Harris, and then Jack Payne's chipping in and Froggy's doing the same thing. But like, other teams are also trying to do that. So that's sort of one thing not to lose sight of is sort of, yeah, although it's really hard to negate someone whose one goal, you know, one aim is to try and, you know, make those intercepts. Like someone like Aaliyah that we struggle with, it's like that's his game. So as to, you know, if you want to do, like, I don't want to see Gunston try and do what he did on Sicily. I said it was a bad read of the room then, and I think it would be a bad read of the room now. So maybe it is just that element of what I said in terms of making the interceptor accountable for their player. If they're in the wrong spot trying to intercept, go to the other guy. But, you know.
Well, we're coming up against some fairly decent ones this week as well with, you know, obviously Lever, May. Petty rolls down there from time to time. Tomlinson plays a key defensive post as well. So it has been shown that you can sort of work around them, but you've got to be smart in the way that you do it. So if you can work, like if you can move the ball, it's just that you can work it around Stephen May, then you're going a long way to beating Melbourne. We did that against, you know, when we sort of finally broke that streak against Richmond in the 2020 qualifying final, we got embarrassed by Dylan Grimes in the matches leading up to that every time we played them. And we sort of found a way to keep him accountable. And I sort of, whether it was Rayner or Link McCarthy, we always had someone on Dylan Grimes, and that went a long way to beating Richmond on that night. So, you know, if it's a pattern for us, then it's something we definitely need to account for this Friday.
Yeah, I think it's almost there could be an element of looking at things that have been done to us and then doing them to others, because we, you know, there have been times where particularly when, you know, when Marcus Adams was out, when sort of Froggy wasn't playing as that third tall, and we sort of only were playing with Harrison and Gardner, where you'd say play on a Mackay and Kerno and they would just split. So that way you're completely negating the ability of either one of them to affect the contest. You've seen that with like Jack Riewoldt and Tom Lynch when they were playing, you know, made it very difficult to get that extra man over. Now, the luxury now of us, and I'm not actually talking about us in a defensive capacity, but like the luxury now is that we've got sort of three, and also we've been dropping OE back to kind of cover that. So it sort of frees up one of Harris or Jack or Frog one way or the other. But to do that the other way and go, okay, well, May's got to go here, so-and-so's got to go here, get them out of the way, and then that means you've got Lever, who's, you know, is he actually a great one-on-one defender? I don't know. Like, I haven't watched enough of him. I know he's a really good interceptor. And then if he's playing one-on-one with, like, a bit of a fox like Gunston, that could be really profitable. And we almost saw that a little bit with McStay.
Yep.
That's my little read on it. Maybe try to use what's been used against us. So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Melbourne's biggest problem is moving the ball inside 50 and score sources. And, you know, maybe they've cracked the code with moving Petrarca forward and playing him, you know, 80-20, 70-30 forward rather than mid. But listen, we keep getting ahead of ourselves here. After we sort of blew open and, you know, put the game out of reach fairly early on, West Coast just gummed it up in terms of ball movement and dropping numbers behind the ball. And they really just, and Adam Simpson admitted as much in the post-match presser. He was like, yep, that was the plan. You know, we got hammered in the first quarter. We tried to play our game and it didn't work. Like, it held up for that first 5-6 minutes. Then Brisbane just, the floodgates open. We kicked, you know, 7 goals or whatever. Saw that our game wasn't going to work, so we had to revert to gumming the game up and try and stem the bleeding. Something they didn't do against Sydney, they just persisted with their game, and we saw what happened to them. So they at least learned that lesson, and it meant that we didn't walk away with a 100-plus win, which is, you know, some sort of disappointing, but at the end of the day, you can't be too unhappy with 2 81-point wins in a row.
It's amazing that that's going to happen in terms of the margin and that kind of capacity. It's also interesting that, like, the percentage boost from the West Coast game significantly higher than the Richmond one. So you're kind of almost cheering the defense more than you're cheering the goals at that stage in the game. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it did make for sort of toughish watching between the second and third quarters while, you know, we still won every quarter, but it wasn't entertaining free-flowing footy, moving the ball at will. You know, that first quarter when Ashcroft was getting 1-2, 1-2-3s, and then just kicking the ball in at will. I mean, Cam Rayner was hitting Hugh McCluggage lace out as a leading forward, and then Hugh McCluggage is kicking set shot goals, which is something obviously that has been an issue for him. Fantastic to watch, but then it did dry up a little bit, you know, due to the way that West Coast were playing. I was pretty happy with the fact that leading into the game, Oscar Allen had kicked a goal in every game, and he was rendered useless for the first half, three quarters. He did get on the end, you know, in some junk time as well. And I thought, you know, Jack Payne had done a fantastic job. The back six, again, had done a fantastic job.
Was he one of the players that's most kicked multiple goals in, like, I think there was a stage he kicked multiple goals in almost every game. So I did definitely. I mean, we've talked about the fact that, like, the only players that have got trade currency are him and Barras. So yeah. There's not a lot to kind of look forward to in that team. But yeah, it was a weird one. It seemed very, it lulled massively that game.
Yeah.
And it just sort of seemed like everyone collectively, you know, fans, players, both sides sort of just like lost a bit of interest and was just like, yeah, you know, how's your weekend?
So, it really was a case of get the win, come away with no injuries if possible, and on to the next couple of weeks, which are going to be much tougher. And, you know, Geelong are putting together some good footy at the right time, and it's a little bit worrying. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, win in the end. Adam Simpson said that Brisbane is his premiership favourite with the way we're playing our footy at the moment. Fags not happy with what Simo had to say about that whole thing, knowing Fags. So, yeah, there'll obviously be a few more changes coming through, but I thought all in all, a reasonably mature performance, got the win, on to the next one. It's just one of those games where you got to bank the points.
Yeah, it's one that, like, any kind of, you know, looking at it in a statistical sense, you're sort of like, you know, nothing really reads particularly interesting here. Like, some players got a bit more of the ball, some players didn't. It's sort of just interesting that on the whole, like, we just seem to be a far lower disposal team these days. But the kind of impact on them, on the game and the efficiency and the moving the ball, you know, albeit around cones, just is a bit different to some of the kind of, I guess, more traditional dominant football. So, yeah, it's a really hard one. Like, statistically, you're like, oh, that doesn't look like a great game because you got sort of most of your players in, like, sub-20 disposals. But, you know, who cares? Jimmy Madden, bit of a weird one, hey?
Yeah, it's a strange one because, you know, looking at the twos, and I'll be honest, I don't sort of look at the twos in depth every week. I do, you know, watch when I can and I have a look afterwards and then I keep like a casual eye on it, but Jimmy Madden has never stuck out, but that's the second game he's come into the team. You know, he didn't have a huge effect, but he didn't exactly balls it up either. He was just another contributor. I wouldn't be playing him against, you know, a Melbourne, a Collingwood, a Port Adelaide, but, you know, when those opportunities open up, I said to you last week, I would have had Harry Sharp in, and I definitely still would have hit, and Sharpie had a great game in the twos. So did everyone, though.
Well, it's interesting that one because it did kind of, that facilitated Wilmot moving onto the wing. You know, as to whether Wilmot's sort of seen more as a winger, I mean, I see him more as a halfback. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's for me, like the majority of the players that went out almost, I mean, the majority of like the assumed players come back in. So yeah, it's a hard one. Madden, weird. He stole your sharp thunder. And then aside from that, there was a bit of a miscommunication with Kadeem Coleman and Zorko and like Kai Lohman coming on the field. So, yeah, it's sort of just, I mean, Stašević kicked a goal. What the hell's going on there? Like, it just, yeah, it seemed like a potentially problematic game, really wasn't. Yeah. So what can we say any more about that other than kind of moving forward? It was like, you know, Jared Lyons was okay, but I think he probably could have kicked 10 goals and Dunkley's coming in immediately. So he sort of seemed to have gone to the royal school of Brandon Stašević hairdressers. Like he was closely cropped.
Yep.
It was pretty funny. Maybe he was trying to sort of just like, ah, oh, don't look at me. That was funny. The tape thing was funny. There was one moment, I don't know if you remember, but like the last vestments of sun on the field at the Gabba, it was like a sliver of about 1 meter by 2 meter. And someone just like completely stitched up Wilmot by like putting it on his head right in the sun. And sort of there was just a collective like from the crowd. And Wilmot somehow clunked it.
Yeah.
Because he's got like, I don't know, X-ray vision or sonar. What's the one? I don't know. Who cares? That was probably all the things that I remember from the game.
Another week where Charlie Cameron has had a very, very quiet game. He's been held goalless a couple of times this year, and the young fella in Hoff managed to do the same thing. This is a bit of a lean period for Chuck now. We're closing in on sort of four-ish weeks where he's had pretty minimal effect.
Would we want to hope that he's saving his best football for the top-tier teams?
Sure. I will choose to believe that.
Let's go with it. Let's just run with it. Why not? Yeah, it's you know, it's a hard one. Like, I haven't had a chance to watch the entirety of the game, and to be perfectly honest, I don't know whether I will.
Yeah.
You know, on the day, it's sort of, it's hard. I got to say, I love watching games at the Gabba. It's just like, it's like a mini shrunken MCG, but yeah. Also, you know, what's different to it and Marvel is it tends to sort of smell like it. Well, at least it did. It smelled like a country barbecue rather than like piss and beer. I don't know. That's my take on it. Go to the Gabba. Don't redevelop it. What's the point? I love it.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Who you got for votes?
Ashcroft the 3 for me, Gunston the 2, and ooh, who's my 1? I know I had them all like lined up. Come back to me.
Yeah, I think I've got 3 Ash, 2 Gunston, and 1 Lockie.
Yeah, I think I was leaving Lockie out this week, and I was going to... Yeah, Big O. Big O gets my 1, actually. And it's not so much for his particular performance on the weekend, but more just a collective. He's just so consistent week in, week out. We're very reliant on him as the number one ruckman. And the things he does, like he drifts forward, he floats back, and he just goes about it, his business, without sort of much, you know, favour, and he just does the work. I wouldn't be surprised if he was fairly high up there in the Brisbane BNF towards the end of the season.
He's also got a great sense of timing in terms of kicking that goal and giving the crowd the free Big Mac.
Lovely.
The following day. Just, I was like, oh, do you get a free Big Mac when Big O kicks a goal? And they're like, no, that was just really good timing. I'm like, a bit of a missed opportunity there, surely. But yeah, no, that's totally valid. I think you could almost have like drawn it out of a hat. And I think Harris ended up getting like the 10 coaches votes. So
yeah, he had a great game as well. I think when I was reflecting on it immediately after the game, those were my 3 were Gunston, Harrison, and Ashcroft in no particular order, but Harris misses out this week.
It is kind of interesting how, you know, although they've been good throughout the season, particularly after the Hawthorn debacle, our 2 co-captains have been exemplary.
Yeah.
And really have justified their selection as that, and also kind of abated any kind of like, you know, apprehension that I had. I don't know about you, but that's really good for the playing group.
Yeah, co-captains is always a bit of a strange one when it's announced. And you're like, you know, how often has it really worked? There's only like, you know, Sydney probably is the one that screams out as a premiership winning team with co-captains. Other than that, it's sort of like you expect that from developing and rebuilding teams, co-captains, to sort of spread leadership around as much as possible. But, yeah, can't argue with it so far. One question I did want to ask you, and we've seen it work really well for, obviously, Collingwood and Port, the two top teams. Both their coaches down on the boundary line. Now, this is the first season that Fags has decided to move up to the box. Is that sort of something you might think we should consider towards the back end of the season? Is Fags coming back down to the boundary line?
Not for me. I think he essentially pioneered that move in the modern era when he needed to kind of translate. He needed to get more of the kind of emotional investment and buy-in and kind of like effort from the team. And although there have been times where we've seen effort lapse a little bit, but it's almost he's able to view the game more objectively higher up, I think. And I think it's led to him having better coaching moments, making better decisions and things like that. So I firmly would say keep him in the box. And that gimmick element of it, it really worked for getting us to where we are. But I think it's more the prototype of the coach we need is in terms of someone who sees the larger picture. And when you're kind of cooped up like that, whether that points to us having less good assistant coaches, like maybe Fly and Hinckley might have people that they trust more and they just need to be there in like a nursery sense. But like, yeah, I got to say no. I don't want him to come down.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do know the sort of pedigree that Fly's got around him in Leppage and Bolton and people of that ilk. So he's definitely got a fairly strong contingent surrounding him. I'm not overly familiar with Ken Hinckley. I know Josh Carr is a pretty well sought after senior assistant. So, maybe that plays into it as well, where we've had the same sort of group of people for a hot minute now. So, yeah, I just thought it was...
You said it yourself earlier on the season, kind of the amount of team-led element to some of the breaks in play and things like that. So it seems a bit less reliant on that revving up. And I also think if you're there and you're doing that sort of thing all the time, because, Fags is an emotional coach when he's particularly on the boundary line. And, yeah, you love to see it, but also it loses its potency. And I wonder if, if Collingwood and Port Adelaide got into a situation where they weren't in great form, what would happen if they needed a three-quarter time spray?
Yeah.
Given they've got an emotional coach that's possibly, not going off at players, but you know what I mean? Like, they're letting their emotions known. How would that work when you're in a little bit of adversity? Whereas I think Fag's got a good spray in him, and keeping him separate from the players means that, when needed, that could come out. So,
yeah, you make a good point there, actually. All right. So, D's this Friday at the MCG. There will be changes. You'd imagine Bez comes in, Dunkley, if fit, but it sounds more and more likely. And like I said, we'll get an update later on today. So by the time this is out, we may know the answer to this. If he's fit, he comes back in. But I would say that he's more likely than unlikely to miss another week at least. And, if it means having him in the team for, a longer term, then that's obviously the right decision. McCarthy, I would imagine, comes straight back in. I don't know that Archie comes back in for Gunston. I think, obviously, six goals, you hold your spot. Madden would go out for me and for Bez.
Yeah, I think I've got Gun. I just sort of picked four and a sub from the list of 10 players I've got. I think that's about right. So I've got Gunston in. Gunston stays, Berry in, Link in, Dorco stays, and then the sub out of either Archie, Lohman.
Yep.
And Dunkley in a fit. And if Dunkley is in, someone's going to miss out, and I don't really know who.
I mean, you'd imagine that person is Jared Lyons.
Yeah, but he wasn't in. I've got him out somehow.
Have you got Bez coming in for JL? Probably.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't really know how functionally that'll work. Yeah, I didn't really think this through, did I? I didn't match player for player. Yeah, we'll see. Well, I've been right before, and I've been wrong before. So it's a hard one if Dunkley gets up. Because, who does Link come in for? I mean, for me, I'd put him in instead of for Zorko, just structure-wise. But, it's good problem to have.
It is. It certainly is. And, I mean, at no point is, we've said it before. People are saying it all over the AFL media landscape that it's going to be extremely hard for Daniel Rich to crack his way back into this team, especially with that speed and use we've got coming off the back line. Like, no one's ever questioned Daniel Rich's ball use, but... when you can have 80% of the ball use matched with, speed and defensive efforts, then I think it's obviously what we've chosen to go forward with. He had a reasonable day in the twos, 19 odd touches, kicked a vintage Daniel Rich goal from outside 50 in a game where that the reserves won by 128 points, I think. Yep. Wiley Buzzer kicking 6 goals. In terms of AFL listed players, Harry Sharp had a good day, 30-2. So he's putting his hand up. Darcy Fort had a great game, 28 touches. Jackson Pryor, 25-1. Darragh Joyce, 22, and a shot on goal, which he missed. Cockatoo, 15-1. So he's doing his bit. I'm not sure. You know, I'd like to see Nakai Cockatoo sort of play a game at some point, maybe as a sub. But I think more likely he's going to be sort of shown the door at the end of the year for whatever reason. He's a very talented player, just for whatever reason can't get a go.
Which is a shame, because it seemed like the only reason he couldn't get a go, you know, back way when, was just he couldn't get his body right. So, but no, that two's performance seemed to have the North Preston ant colony running away pretty quickly. So I, funnily enough, I had previously been to some North Preston Bull Ants games back when they were coached by Josh Fraser. And I sat in front of Silvani and watched Silvani's beloved Carlton be beaten by North Preston with his least talented son playing for the Bull Ants. So it was made for a pretty funny day. Yeah, and then I sort of was like, ah, I'm moving away from this area. So, you know, not to be.
We know Melbourne's still going to be without Clayton Oliver's going to be missing for another 3 or 4 weeks with this, you know, lingering hamstring slash infection slash other various rumours that are floating around. I don't know if it was you that was talking to me about this tattoo infection that rumour's been floating around. I also got a text from a mate saying, is there any truth to the rumour that he's got some sort of strike against his name and that's why he's not playing? I've got no idea about any of that. So I guess, you know, the important news for us is he's still out of the team and he's a very handy cog to that Melbourne midfield.
Does it say much about the player in question that none of these things are surprising?
Yeah, I suppose so. The tattoo one is probably the most ludicrous for some reason.
But the idea of him, like, you know, being on a drugs ban is not surprising at all.
I mean, I don't know Clayton Oliver and I don't know what he gets up to in his spare time. And I'm not going to allege anything.
Allegedly. All of this is alleged. I'm just saying that, you know, any one of these results wouldn't be overly surprising to me. Maybe that's just the woes of being a modern footballer. But he has an annoying face, so any level of controversy that he can get makes me happy.
Sure. They'll also be without Bailey Fritch, who is obviously a very handy forward, and he looks likely to miss at least the rest of the home and away season as well. So a couple of big outs for Melbourne.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
This is a game that is going to have a lot resting on it in terms of not only does it give us a huge gap between us and Melbourne, I think it pushes it out to, what, 3 or 4 games between us and them. It gets us a game closer to Port and Collingwood. It's a game at the MCG, which we would love to win, obviously, and hopefully sort of just, you know, it's one of those games that if we lose, I think people are going to walk away going, oh, yeah, this again.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. I don't want that feeling. I want to go there, do the job, and get out, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I want to crush him.
Yeah.
I want to crush him.
I think we all want that, I know.
We owe them an even bigger crushing based on the light debacle and the last 15 minutes and the, like, 36 points they put on us to, like, become the best last quarter team in the history of the game. It's like, nah, bros, they were shelled. So, kill them, I say. Blow them up.
I mean, yes, obviously another 81-point win would be great. It's going to speak volumes about us one way or the other. Like, it's going to really solidify us in a lot of people's books if we walk away with a win, and it's going to raise the same questions that have always been there if we can't get up as well. And especially if we show up like we did against Hawthorn, like we did against Port Adelaide, and the effort's just simply not there.
Yeah, the writing, it'll be, I think we've said it before. It's one of those ones where you're like, every kind of insecurity comes out when you get, like, picked at that sore spot and you're like, ah, God, here we go. So it is a different team though. So, you know, there have been changes made. I feel like the team kind of atmosphere is a bit different. So hopefully that carries something a little bit different, you know, into that game and with that game. So
yeah, we saw, you know, there's a couple of players that generally like playing against Melbourne. Hipwood and Charlie have both been proven performers against Melbourne over the last sort of two or three years. They've managed to put a couple of goals on the board, and hopefully they can do the same because, as I said, Charlie's had a couple of quiet weeks. Joe had a very, very Joe Danaher type game on Saturday. Could have kicked a bag. You know, the quintessential Joe Danaher moment where he was running sort of down the wing towards the half forward line, took maybe even a bounce or two, got to the juncture of the boundary in the 50 and just fell over. And you thought,
I think he kind of thought he was Buddy Franklin and then remembered that his teammates are Zach Bailey. So first one, then the other. But that was, he somehow got out of that too.
I know. And it was just, all of it was so Joe Danaher.
I don't get it, but I don't know. I've got a better feeling about Friday than I probably should.
For some reason, I do as well, and I think that's more just blind optimism. Maybe it's the fact that we've been playing fairly decent footy. I think the upside is enormous if we can go down and get the win. Big Friday night game. You know, these are the tests that we've historically failed over the last 5 years. You know, primetime game at the MCG in front of lots of people. You know, a big opponent, a finalist bound opponent, a top four sort of quality opponent that we have managed to stumble across over the last, you know, handful of years. So if we can get the win, it's going to be big, but the downside.
We're in good stead. I think we're in good stead given the win in Melbourne against St Kilda, followed by the ruthless performance against Richmond, and then like, albeit a kind of disinterested but still controlled performance. You know, defensively we were very, very tight. So that should hopefully lead us in good stead. What more to say about that game? Just do it.
Yep. And basically that's it. And you know, with this podcast going out on Tuesday night, we've only got a few days to wait until that one comes around, and I'm beside myself with excitement. Geelong the weekend after at the Gabba, which, you know, we're 8-0 at the Gabba so far this year. But Geelong, as I said, you know, briefly mentioned, they're putting together some good footy. They absolutely dismantled the Roos on the weekend. Tyson Stengel's hitting some good form. They're small forwards, you know. With the changes we've made to our back line, you know, with McKenna, Kadeen Coleman, Starcevic, Wilmot, they'll have their work cut out for them with Close, Grind Myers, Stengel, Gary Rowan. So that's something to watch out for. And then, of course, they've got Jeremy Cameron and Tom Hawkins, who are definitely no mugs as well.
Is Cameron back and playing?
Did I see him on the weekend? I'm not sure if he played on the weekend, but you'd imagine in a couple of weeks he'll definitely be there, and he's definitely not an AFL footballer to take lightly because we know what he can do.
Can we requisition someone to go past this like hospital in Geelong and just bonk him on the head?
That's a crime, brother.
Yeah, but I mean, someone's got to take one literally for the team.
Yeah. We'll see if we can just sort of contract Mitch Robinson as some sort of mercenary for the day.
That's what we do here. We get done for conspiracy and, you know, crime. It was funny, like, you know, I spent a bit of time with my brother over the weekend, and we were talking about, like, the person doing the coin toss at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, Danny Gray.
And, like, well, just generally, not him. Like, you know, if you were, and it was like, imagine if it's grand final day, you're doing the coin toss and you just like knee the opposing captain of the team you like and give him a massive corky. Yeah, you'll get in a lot of trouble, but...
How much trouble can you really get in?
I mean, assault.
Yeah, I suppose a fair amount. But is it worth it?
I don't know. Well, it depends. If we find someone with no record, you can probably argue it down to a misdemeanor. So we're taking auditions.
Sure.
On the Brisbane Lions crime cast. It's amazing some sort of absolutely, utterly useless and hilarious chat you can have. So
fair enough.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
In the spirit of us coming up against Melbourne this Friday night, I've gone for, a bit of a dual citizen for my nostalgic player of the week. Ended up playing over 200 games, so he's not exactly obscure as some of the other players we've mentioned, but only a handful for the Lions. And I'm talking about the number one.
How dare you? How dare you take this away from me? This is my grand final of nostalgic players.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm getting in here early. The man that loved a bit of, you know, electrical tape around his head. We're talking, of course, about the number one pick, Travis Johnston, who came the year before we sort of got that glut of players, you know, Buchanan, Maguire, Reigns, Favola. He came at the end of 2007, and we thought, oh yeah, beauty, number one pick. He's been a proven performer for many, many years, and he did his bit when he played for Brisbane, but he never really sort of reached any lofty heights.
He was an odd fella, wasn't he? Kind of crabbed around the field.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember a lot about him because he was at the time my favourite player because, you know, he just looked weird. And I think we clearly established I'm a savant for the weird.
Yes.
At that time, any time anyone had a set shot, he was first to them in almost like this weird, like, yoga, telepathy, like calming, like psychology thing. He just would turn up and be like, yeah, you're all right. Just take the set shot, mate. Like, we'll go for a surf later. Like, I'm sure that's what he said.
Probably. I can't imagine it being too far from the actual truth. Just having a look on his Wikipedia page here, would you know any of his nicknames? And there's four listed here on his Wikipedia page.
Nah, but like, I didn't know him personally, so.
Yeah, well, two of them you would imagine are aesthetically based in Jesus and Caveman.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, that almost seems like they're too obvious.
Yes. He also had Trapper and Trigger as his nicknames as well listed on his Wikipedia page. I'm sure there were more floating around, but not sure what he's doing these days. After he got delisted by us, he nominated for the AFL draft again. Didn't get picked up.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just sort of like floated around. He'd like hang out at like the gun shop cafe at like West End and stuff like that. And just he'd be like, oh, there's Travis Johnson. Cool. He looks exactly the same. He's even wearing electrical tape to breakfast. Like, he's an old fella. He had a couple of blinders, I think one of them against Collingwood. Yeah, it might have been. Well, I mean, that was in that. You did say the aforementioned debacle year of let's try and win a premiership in 2010, which Collingwood won, but they didn't beat us. Who really won the premiership? Collingwood?
Yes. Oh, well, you'll have to come up with someone more nostalgic for your grand final performance then, if not Travis Johnson. But when I saw his name and I thought, you know what? We're playing Melbourne this week. This will be the one.
You could have gone with like any one of those other knobs from that year, like Staker or Buchanan. I mean, not knobs, you know what I mean? Just flagrantly. But you had to hit me where it hurt, right in the heart.
Right in the Travis Johnson shaped heart that you've got.
Well, right in the trigger and the trapper and the caveman and the whatever. So.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms.
Well, that is, I feel like we didn't talk a lot about the West Coast game, but I also feel like there wasn't a lot to talk about with the West Coast game, and I'm okay with that. You know, we come up against Melbourne this Friday night. The Twos, they have got the week off, so a rest for them. Another week off for Daniel Rich, you'd have to imagine, before coming up against Geelong on the Saturday morning, 11 o'clock game, as we take on the seniors later that afternoon. So pretty thankful that when we played Geelong at the Gabba, it's moved to sort of 4:30, so I won't be in the sun for quite as long.
Breaking news, big Stewie Dew.
Yeah.
Given the old heave-ho.
Now, obviously, by the time that anyone listens to this, you'll be well across this at that point. But yeah, Stewie Jew's just been shown the door. Caroline Wilson got her way, and she...
Oh, come on. She did not get her way. She was right.
Yeah, no. I said this to one of my good mates at work here who is a Suns fan. We were speaking about this last week, and, you know, in the same vein that Mark Robinson said, you know, Caro's got a vendetta against the Suns. We were chatting about it in the office, and I said to him, I was like, yeah, you'd be surprised. Caro's more often right than not. And he said, oh, come on, don't worry about it. And then she doubled down on Footy Classified last night. Less than 12 hours later, see you later, Stuart.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that she's had a vendetta. I think she generally is more right than wrong. And the idea of, like, what would be the value in her, like, tarnishing her kind of reputation over the Gold Coast Suns?
Who knows?
I mean, it's non-existent, but... Yeah, I mean, that kind of... Is that going to change things for the Q Clash in a few weeks' time? Or will the new manager bounce have waned by then, hopefully?
Yeah, well, it looks like... Who is it? Stephen King's going to be taking over as interim coach.
What, in between, like, writing novels?
Yes.
Bit of a weird one.
And then it looks, you know, at this stage that Damien Hardwick is probably the man leading the charge to take over the Suns. So means we're safe. Because I know, yeah, I know it's the last thing you want.
Yeah, well, I mean, they needed something. I tell you what, like, the Max King thing was, like, not a good look, but also, like, imagine that. Like, you get slightly reprimanded at work and you're like, I'm quitting. It's like, well, how are you going to live and eat and stuff?
Yeah.
You're an enormous individual. You probably need to eat quite a lot of food. But, yeah, they've got 3 first-round draft picks coming through the academy this year, and I feel like they need a little bit more to kind of warrant keeping them there because, yeah, they've definitely languished. And although it's funny, it's still not great for the game.
No, you're right. No.
Particularly in Queensland. And to see that, you know, I gotta just mention it, like 24,000 at the Gabba midday to watch West Coast.
It's pretty good.
And when West Coast are the bottom team. That's impressive. Like, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and I think the number was even higher when we played Freo at the same time slot as well. I think it was a, you know, middle of the day Saturday game, and I think it was probably closer to sort of higher 20s in that one. And that was on a long weekend as well. So, you know, it shows the fickle nature of Brisbane sports fans that if you're winning, you'll get people through the door. So that's, you know, fantastic to see.
True, but it did seem a little bit more like they, you know, the game is, you know, obviously growing up there. And I think it's just kind of provides it in good stead. Like there's far more like Brisbane stuff you see around the traps anyway. Like, you know, you'd almost like 6 or 7 years ago, you'd wear a Brisbane scarf and people in Brisbane wouldn't know, or wear a Lions scarf and people would have no idea what team it was. Like, oh, is that the Broncos? I didn't know they had blue. And it's like, they don't have blue. You absolute goose.
Sounds like you're talking about a very specific interaction you had with someone once.
I think you know me too well, don't you? Just like that time I got bailed up for wearing a Bears Guernsey and a Fitzroy, like, I think, bottle shop, and some woman told me I stole her team. And I was like, dude, I was like 5 and I woke up and my team had changed too. I had no understanding of how or why or anything, but I wasn't happy. And obviously now I'm happy. So, and I understand the economic and mitigating circumstances around it. So,
yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think that that will actually never happen again.
Emerge?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, of course not. But I mean, did you really want to go to North Melbourne?
No, obviously not. But who knows? Who knows? All right, anything else to touch on before we wrap this bad boy up and set our sights for Friday night?
No.
Okay.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!